Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
In Ottoman town, not a soul would look up. Not a soul would look up. Not a soul would look down.
Excavating the ultimate super collection. I'm John Schaefer, and today on Soundcheck, we conclude our Super Collectors Week with a look back at the late historian Alan Lomax. His field recordings of folk music made him and some of the people he recorded famous. We'll hear about the race to digitize and distribute the rest of his massive collection.
My love, she left me in the autumn, left me in the autumn rain.
Later, a different kind of preservation effort. The LA-based group Noah and the Megafauna is carrying on the classic sounds of French jazz, Eastern European folk, and more, with a debut album. They'll join us to play live. All of that on Soundcheck after the news. Alan Lomax. He wasn't the man of steel, but he may have been the ultimate super collector. This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer, and we conclude our week-long Super Collectors series today with the legacy of a very prolific musicologist. And later, a live performance in our studio from the LA-based group called Noah and the Megafauna. But first, Alan Lomax. He was best known for documenting folk music in the U.S. and throughout much of the world. His field recordings introduced countless listeners to the first recordings of Leadbelly and Woody Guthrie, as well as lesser-known musicians in far-flung parts of Italy and Indonesia. But it turns out, all of that was just the tip of the iceberg. The musician and producer Don Fleming is director of the Alan Lomax Archive, and part of the effort to make that unheard portion of the archive more widely available. Don, welcome to Soundcheck.
Well, thank you, John. It's great to be here.
Alan Lomax, I mean, he was kind of born to be a super collector, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think from, you know, his earliest years, he just got into the rhythm of it, you know.
Because his dad was John Lomax.
His dad had you know, he was assisting his dad on his first field trip where they went out to Parchment Farm and, you know, and throughout the South, especially at that time, to collect field recordings. And he just had a passion for it, and he never stopped. And it went from, you know, just trying to learn more about the traditional deep-rooted American music to him wanting examples of everything from the world. And that's sort of where he ended up. By the end, he had gotten copies of not only his own collection, his own recordings, but other people's recordings, and had, you know, enough to cover 2,000 cultures. So that's really, you know, the result of that lifelong work.
Now, so how big an archive, how big a super collection are we talking about here?
It's quite massive. I mean, we gave the bulk of the physical collection to the Library of Congress in 2004, and it was all in New York. And Alan had been in New York since the late 50s when he came back from England. And, you know, it was many hundreds of linear feet of material, thousands of tapes, 400,000 feet of 16-millimeter film, almost a million pieces of paper. So
it was,
you know, it taking up about eight rooms in a top floor of Hunter College.
Wow. It says here, grand total of 350,000 items. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, that's about right.
That's apart from the paper.
That's films, recordings,
books, photographs, etc.
That's right.
So that is the Alan Lomax Archive. How much, I mean, everybody knows, you know, names like Woody Guthrie and, you know, a lot of people know Leadbelly songs, even if Leadbelly is, you know, a generation or two before they were born. How much have we not heard of this?
Well, there's a lot. I mean, we have gone through the process of digitizing and restoring and cataloging all of Alan's work that was there at the archive in New York. And just now, we're putting it all online for the first time, where you can hear the full versions of everything. There's over 17,000 tracks. And by the end of this month, they'll all be up there. We have about 10,000 so far, but we're uploading even as we speak. And so most of that has never been heard.
I mean,
During the years that Alan was active, he did get things put out occasionally. There was a famous collection on Atlantic Records. There was a big collection of world music that he did for Columbia through the 50s and 60s. And so things did come out, but the majority of it still hasn't been heard.
He recorded Gene Ritchie right here in New York City in May of 1949. Is this, Gene Ritchie went on to a really fine career as a great American folk singer.
Oh, yeah.
and great dulcimer player as well.
Well, yeah, one of the best. And Alan was among the people who were friends with her in those late 40s, you know, Pete Seeger, Ann Leadbelly, and Oscar Brand. And Oscar got her on to his show here at NYC in 1949.
Mm-hmm.
She became a regular on the show. And Alan, you know, really, as always, if you found someone who said, here's a song my grandmother taught me, and it's about King George, he would say, oh, well, that's one I want to record because I know that that's going to be a British ballad. And,
mm-hmm.
and how did, when it came to America, how did it change? How did the words change? Sometimes, like, House of the Rising Sun was a different British ballad, the melody of it, and then became, you know, adapted. And so he would always look for these changes. I mean,
variances, the folk people call them. Yeah.
Which people had tracked in England before, you know, before recorded sound, before electricity. There were ballads that would go from one end of England to the other just by people singing them to each other.
Well, this Gene Ritchie piece we're about to hear, which Alan Lomax recorded in 1949, is one of those songs. There
That's
are
right.
many variants of it. And if you've never heard the song Nottaman Town before, but are a Bob Dylan fan, there may be something vaguely familiar about this.
In Nottaman Town, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look down, not a soul would look up, not a soul would look down to show me the way to Nottaman Town. I rode a gray horse, it was called a gray mare, gray mane and gray tail, a green stripe down her back. Gray mane and gray tail, green stripe down her back. There wa'n't a hair on her be what was coal black. She stood so still, she threw me to the dirt. She bruised my heart.
Gene Ritchie from the tiny mountain hamlet of Viper, Kentucky, recorded here in New York City, May 5th, 1949, by Alan Lomax, the ultimate super collector, and Don Fleming, director of the Alan Lomax Archive, with me on Soundcheck. So this is a traditional, let's say, Appalachian ballad, as she would have known it, but, you know, this goes back, I mean, Fairport Convention in the 60s did a very...
Oh, yeah,
well-known
yeah.
version of Nottaman Town.
A lot of people... It became one of those songs that everyone in Greenwich Village at one point, mm-hmm. I think, was you know, doing their version of it. And I think that's how Bob came across it.
Bob Dylan.
Was Dave Van Ronk, I believe, mm-hmm. was maybe doing a version, and he heard him. And, you know, as a great folky does, take that song and adapt it and turn it into another song. And that's the folk tradition right
and
there.
And the song was...
Masters of War.
Right, the Bob Dylan song Masters of War,
yeah.
based on what you just heard, that Nottaman Town, sung by Gene Ritchie. So this, I'm listening in a quiet room on headphones. I can hear what engineers call the print through.
Yeah, there is a little bit on that one. Yeah.
So that you can sort of hear a pre-echo and an echo of her voice. So this was analog tape then.
Oh, yeah. All of these were from analog tape. Before the 40s, Alan recorded on acetate disc with a Presto recorder. But after that, he went to tape and always used what were really the best machines available at the time. And, you know, most of the tapes don't have any print through. That particular session does have a little bit. And what you hear, for the most part, is just the raw transfer. I mean, mm-hmm. we don't do very much to, we restore the acetates more because they're very noisy, and you really need it with those. But with the tape, it's kind of beautiful to hear the raw.
Yeah.
transfer.
It's the document of just the music, but of the man who recorded it.
That's right.
So that's from the Alan Lomax archive. So this is one of the things that's been digitized and is...
It's up there now. It's on this on our ACE online archive. The Association for Cultural Equities is the organization Alan started to really promote world music from every culture so that everyone could hear it, hear their own culture, hear other people's cultures. And now, yes, it's up online on our website.
And there is a link to that website on our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. World music. No one had coined that term. He didn't use that term, but he was certainly going for that, as you say. The term he used was global jukebox.
Well,
that's what you're doing here, isn't it?
It is. I mean, we're trying to sort of revive what he where he left off. I mean... He, especially between the late 80s and the middle 90s, he tried to build this thing that he called the Global Jukebox. And it was the results of all his work for the previous 30 years, of all the songs he collected from around the world, and all these examples of dance that he collected on film from around the world. And, you know, he built this machine, but we're now going through the process of rebuilding it, taking the old code, putting it into an open source. And now we're going to start building interfaces so it'll go online. And that's going to come up. Hopefully later this year, components of the Global Jukebox itself will also be on our site.
So he actually built something that what did it look like?
Well, it's the last version of it, which we have over at the archive, was in a Macintosh. I mean, it was just, you know...
It's a virtual jukebox.
They started with punch cards. And then by the end, they were, you know, doing the most recent, you know, technology... Mm-hmm. But what they did that makes it more than just a description of these songs and their places is they coded the songs. They came up with a coding system for the music and the dance, which allowed it then to go into analytical tools that are built into the jukebox, so you can track anything from like migration patterns to cultural things like what kind of agriculture did they have. You can tell because people did work songs. If tuna fishermen would sing a certain way, and you can tell that from the way they coded the songs and they built the... It's like a earlier, more complicated version of like Pandora or something.
Yeah,
you know, much more complicated. It gives you cultural indicators.
Because he believed, Alan Lomax, that especially dance and dance music across cultures, there were... that you could find universal, you know, you could find commonalities even in different cultures.
That's right. That's
so
right.
If you're a rice-based culture... Your rice-pounding music in Bali is going to have something in common with that rice-pounding music in Afghanistan or
that's
whatever.
That's right, yes, exactly.
So that's the Global Jukebox. And from one of the corners of the globe that he did actually spend time in, Spain, we're going to hear something from one Jose Maria Rodriguez. Now, he went to Spain... couple of times, right?
He went in 1952 and did a long trip there and on behalf of the BBC. He had moved to the UK and the BBC helped him get over there, and then he would come back and play these songs on the BBC. And yeah, this particular song was something he recorded in Galicia, which is up in sort of the northwest corner.
That's the Celtic region of Spain.
Yeah, it's kind of the Scotland of Spain, some people would say. And bagpiping music was very big. It's big throughout Spain and Italy, but especially in that area. And this song was actually what they called a morning song. Bagpipers would play it to announce the morning. This particular fellow had just a little wooden whistle with eight holes in it.
Mm-hmm.
And he would come into town playing this particular tune. And to announce that he was in town, and this guy in particular was a knife grinder and a pig castrator, so he would sort of announce.
Well, those two kind of go together,
yeah,
don't
so
they?
Yeah, so he would say, "Well, if anyone needs any work done, I'm here." He'd go down the street, and you know, someone's pointed out to me that probably the pigs did not like to hear this song.
So this is Jose Maria Rodriguez, recorded in Galicia, Spain, in 1952 by Alan Lomax. That is Jose Maria Rodriguez, itinerant farmer, pig castrator, knife grinder, and whistler, playing this whistle and an alborada, a morning song, from Galicia, Spain, in November 1952, recorded by Alan Lomax, whose massive collection of 350,000 items, film, photographs, manuscripts, recordings, and books, is all under the care of my guest, Don Fleming. He is director of the Alan Lomax Archive. When did Alan die?
He died in 2002.
Mm-hmm. So he lived into the beginning of the digital age.
He had already moved on to computers
and things like that.
In the mid-90s, he had a couple of strokes, which sort of took him out of the business. And his daughter, Anna Lomax Wood, came in and really started the process then of like saying for the first time, we need to start digitizing everything, mm-hmm. start restoring everything. And so it's gone on since then.
And, you know, just before we get too far away from that morning song, again, as with the first recording we heard, people who have never heard of this guy or this instrument may recognize that tune because I guess Miles, or if not Miles Davis, then Gil Evans probably heard it.
Yeah, it came out at the time on this series that Alan did of world music that was on Columbia, and one of the producers at Columbia gave a copy to Gil Evans, and it ended up in the studio with them, and they heard it and liked it, and again adapted mm-hmm. that little piece you just heard onto the song they called the Pan Piper was on Sketches of Spain.
Sketches of Spain, the great Miles Davis, Gil Evans record. Bill from Brooklyn has a comment that he left on our webpage. When Alan was collecting these field recordings, they were for the purpose of research and archiving. I know when Harry Smith's anthology of American folk music was reissued, efforts had to be made to find these artists or their estates and pay royalties, which hadn't previously been done. In making Lomax's recordings available, have there been any hurdles in finding artist descendants and clearing royalties?
There's been a lot of challenges, and it's something that we did early on and continue to do, is that we reach out to the heirs and make sure that they do get paid when things are sold, and mainly that they get them back themselves. I mean, it's part of what the repatriation work we do. We go into the communities, and we've been doing this. We just did an event in Como last week.
Como, Mississippi.
And we go and try to find more heirs by doing that. We've gone through two intense periods of reaching out and looking for people and finding a lot of them, which has been great. So I think that it is something that, you know, you certainly need to do. I mean, the difference with the Harry Smith material was that Harry had a fantastic record collection, and mm-hmm. it was a compilation of those records. The difference with us is it's the field recordings that Alan made himself. But in most cases, and everything, especially after the Library of Congress, he had really good contact information, and he had agreements that were done in the field with all of these people. And we used those to go back and find the people again.
So you were just down in Como, Mississippi. They must be glad to see you coming with, you know, all this material and hopefully a check for, you know, grandchildren or whatever.
Well, it's always, you know, what we try to do is find partners in these communities where Alan did the recordings and then make a real event out of it so that the whole community knows about it. And in this case, they started with the fife and drum band came down the street in a parade, and everyone came to the library, and it kind of announced it to the town mm-hmm. of like something's happening. And then
like Facebook or Twitter,
except out in the open. And some of the heirs, some of the grandchildren of Miles Pratcher, who was part of that collection, were there, and they have a band called the Como Mamas, and they sang.
Nice.
And so, you know, yeah, we try to in this case we made a book that the library can use and check out to people and use for other branches in that area. So we're just trying to, in a number of ways, make it available. And then, you know, through those online ways and mm-hmm. hard copies.
So make it available to us to listen to, but also, as you say, repatriate the original materials to the place from which they came. And in this recording, featuring Sidney Carter, Rosalie Hill, and the great blues guitarist Fred McDowell, that place was Como, Mississippi, in September of 1959, when Alan Lomax recorded When the Train Comes Along.
When the train comes along, long, gonna meet her at the station. When the train comes along, and she sees my mother, and she asks for me, Lord, gonna meet her at the station. When the train comes along,
when he died in 1972, Fred McDowell was recognized as one of the most influential and individual bluesmen ever recorded. Alan Lomax recorded him in Como, Mississippi, September 25th, 1959. And we've been examining the Alan Lomax archives with the director, Don Fleming. There is a link on our webpage to the website with all of the digitized recordings that have been made available so far. Just go to our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. Don's not going too far because we have more to talk about and more to listen to. A special edition of our regular Pick 3 feature with Don Fleming coming up next. And then later, a live performance from a band of biblical proportions, Noah and the Megafauna, will cram into our soundcheck studio.
Never had to bend. I was the soil your roots could never command. And just like we...
3, that's a magic number.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Time for a special Super Collectors edition of our regular weekly feature, Pick 3, when we extract 3 songs from some know-it-all music fan. And once again, I'm joined in the studio by Don Fleming, who I've already introduced you to as director of the Alan Lomax Archive. But Don is also a musician and producer himself. And in addition to overseeing one of the world's most famous music collections, is a collector himself as well. How much stuff do you have, Don?
Well, you know, certainly nothing on the scale of Alan's collection, but I would say I have probably like 15,000 LPs and 10,000 45 and thousands of 8-tracks, cassettes, and CDs. And then I like to get a little bit of like every possible medium. So I have play tapes and beta videotapes and laser disc and Edison disc and
Edison cylinders.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
And my band Gumball, we once bought 25,000 8-tracks at one time because we were big 8-track fans.
25,000 8-tracks at once.
Yeah, there was a...
For the low, low price of...
$450.
That is low.
Took us about a day and a half to move them. This guy had them in a, where, like in a storage space behind his store and had like a little box out in the store and had had these things since the 70s. And every time the box got low, he'd go and, you know, put 5 more in. And we said, do you have more than these? And he was like, oh, I got 25,000 back there. We made a deal.
So... where do you put them all?
Well, at the time, we had our practice space was nearby. This was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we just moved them all in there. And for a while, it was just a big mountain in there. And then we sorted them eventually and culled them. And I ended up with maybe 1,000 or so. And Malcolm Riviera, our keyboard guitarist, took the bulk of them down to North Carolina, where they still reside.
Okay. And your stuff, your the LPs and all the rest of it?
You know, I have a house. I'm out in Jersey in Montclair. So, you know, I have some stuff at home and enough room to keep it there. And I also have a storage space because I also have tons of all my original master tapes from my bands and the production work I've done. So that's quite a big amount of stuff, too.
Yes, Don Fleming has had his share not only of bands, but producing Hole and Teenage Fan Club. And did you do
Sonic
an Alice
Youth.
Cooper thing?
I did. I worked with Alice, yeah.
But let's you do collect, among this super collection, there's a very specific collection of stuff that once belonged to other musicians. And that gets us to our first pick.
Yeah, okay. Well, more recently, I stopped buying a lot of LPs and a lot of 45s and started looking at collections that belong to other people. I recently got one by Mae Axton, who co-wrote Heartbreak Hotel and was Hoyt Axton's mom. And has some cool Hoyt singles in that. And the collection I brought today was one that looks like it belonged to Marty Robbins.
Mm-hmm. The guy who sang El Paso.
Yeah, you know, huge country star for many years. And it was in one of those pink round disco cases that you turn the handle at the top and the top pops off.
Right.
And it had all these singles in it that just, you know, indicated that it was either his or maybe someone who worked for him. But there were notes on some of the singles to him. And one of them in particular was from this guy, Bill Woods, who was a big deal in Bakersfield back in the day when that sound first came around. This guy ran the club there and, you know, made a lot of deals. And he was sort of the mentor for Buck Owens and Ferlin Husky and a ton of other people. But he sent this single to Marty and wrote on it. And it's one of his songs called Bop. B-O-P, Bop. Mm-hmm.
So this is Bill Woods and his orchestra, and you're holding the single, and what does it say on it?
It says, Marty, cover this on Columbia, if possible. This record sold 150 at one store here in Bakersfield. Thanks, Bill.
There's a brand new dance that they call the Bop. Since the kids started doing it, they just won't stop. You just bop. Bop, 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 just bop, 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 bop. Everybody in town is doing that new bebop. Swing your hips to the left and your head to the right. Move nothing but your toes, wave your arms in the night. You just bop, 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 just bop, 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 bop. Everybody in town is doing that new bebop.
Bill Woods and his orchestra with a song called Bop. Early example of the Bakersfield sound. Did Marty ever take his advice and cover this song for Columbia?
No, it doesn't look like he did.
This is from the collection that we think once belonged to Marty Robbins, the popular singer of the late 50s, now belongs to Don Fleming, part of his collection. And you actually have something from the man himself.
Well, yeah. Part of what came was this one single that's an acetate. It's one of the one-of-a-kind records that they would burn at the studio at the time so people could take them home and check it out.
Pressing.
It's a test pressing. And it looks like it's a demo of a song that Marty had cut called My Friend Jim. And it's a bit of a mystery. I was trying to figure out, you know, it doesn't look like he ever put it out. And what's even odder is when I looked up some publishing info on it, I found that it is listed and that one of the co-writers listed is Elvis Presley.
Wow.
And so it would appear that they may have shopped it to Elvis and that Elvis was going to record it. But again, I can find no sign of that. So it's just the mystery and the history lessons behind this that intrigue me and kind of drive me to do this, I think.
So Marty Robbins, a demo that perhaps never got any further than the demo stage of the song My Friend Jim.
When I saw you there, you were dancing around in the arms of my friend Jim. I was frantic and I almost panicked to think you'd go with him. But I love you so and I won't let you go, at least without a fight. So I'm gonna be waiting at your house in the tonight. I'm gonna tell him that he better leave and he better stay away. I'm gonna mention that he best pay attention to what I have.
Well, that sounds great in a not great way.
Yeah.
That is Don Fleming's collection once again of stuff from Marty Robbins, and there is Marty Robbins doing a demo version of this song, My Friend Jim, Elvis Presley connection, but it seems like neither one of them ever actually brought the song out.
No, there's no sign of it.
So you have something really rare there, And perhaps that's why our listener Matthew wrote this this question for you. He writes, I have a record collection of many virgin, i.e. unplayed in the wrapper vinyl, records. These records have a value for collectors as they are mostly Audio Fidelity, which produced the first stereo record in 1957. Therefore, opening them and digitizing them is not an option at this point. What is the best way to store them? Well, for Don Fleming's answer to Matthew's question, go to our webpage, wnyc.org/soundcheck. It's a super collector's version of our weekly Pick 3 feature. How are you managing your own recordings, your own demos, your master tapes from Gumball and your other bands?
Well, I realized that I needed to do the same kind of archival work that I've been doing, not only on the Lomax collection, but I've worked on collections of Hunter S. Thompson and Ken Kesey and Thule Kupferberg, and I kind of have the tools now. I have all the gear I need to do this. So I started my own collection, and I started at some of the earliest stuff, which was my band The Velvet Monkeys, mm-hmm. in 1981. And I transferred not only the master tapes of a release, our first release from then, which was cassette only. And
the master was a cassette?
No, that we put it out on cassette.
Oh, okay.
It was like it was never on, you know, vinyl or CD. It was a cassette release because that was the moment where that was the cool thing to do. And then I transferred all these other tapes that came from the same time period, live shows, you know, demos and other things, and called from that, like, the ones that I wanted to re-release as a reissue. So that's my plan, is to go through my, you know, body of work and do the restoration work and get everything archived and then re-release some of it, you know, as appropriate. And so that's been my side project.
Hmm. So Everything Is Right is originally from 1982. That's 30 years ago. From Don Fleming's band, Velvet Monkeys.
Which are good for us. Everything is right.
Everything Velvet Monkeys, is right. One of Don Fleming's bands from his very musical past. These days he's also director of the Alan Lomax Archive. And Don, it's been great wrapping up our Super Collectors series with you. Thanks very much.
Thank you, John.
And listeners, tell us what you thought of our Super Collector series. Or if you missed any of it, you can find it on our webpage as well. You can email us, soundcheck@wnyc.org, or leave a comment on today's page, wnyc.org/soundcheck.
My head is out of balance. We need those things which are good for us.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. The singer and guitarist Noah Litt couldn't very well call his band Noah and the Animals. He'd never have heard the end of all the Ark jokes. So instead, he's named his band Noah and the Megafauna. Eight humans whose music offers us a mix of gypsy jazz and indie rock. They released their debut album called Anthems for a Stateless Nation late last year. And they're here with us today in the studio for a live performance. This is Moan All Night. It's Noah and the Megafauna live on Soundcheck.
Stand. poets hiss. You can't trust a lover by the way they kiss. And we know what we know, but it's not this.
Wow. That is Noah and the Megafauna live on Soundcheck. The song is called Moan All Night. The folks downstairs in the archives tell us they heard you.
Good.
Through the floor. Nicely done.
That's hard to do with acoustic instruments.
Yes,
you know.
It is, but not when you have like a gazillion of them.
Strength in numbers.
Yeah. So let me introduce, first of all, Noah Litt, playing guitar and singing. The horn section, Gabriel Litt, Emily Saint-Amand Polyakov, and Stephen Clothier, playing the saxes and clarinets. Eliana Athade, playing the bass. Chris Lovejoy, behind our drum kit. Josh Litt, over at the piano. Wen Chang, playing the violin. And in a moment, and on your Sunday night concert, a special guest vocalist, Kat Edmondson, joining us as well. So, Noah, megafauna. These are like those gigantic animals of, like, you know, Paleolithic times,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
Like 20-foot tall sloths and
yeah,
stuff like that.
I love the sloths.
Is that how you see this band?
I do. I was always really bummed that the original Noah didn't get the woolly mammoth into his ark, because I figure, I mean, I don't know. So I really wanted to make this a primal, screaming, stomping kind of vibe, this whole band.
As if it were Django Reinhardt and Stefan Grappelli doing the stomping
exactly.
and screaming.
Yes.
So you're looking
yeah.
back to that Hot Club of France kind
right.
of sound as well.
Right. But Wooly. Yes.
Born with the name Noah, I mean, have animals and floods always been a part of your kind of mythology?
More so just apocalyptic stuff in general,
mm-hmm.
I think.
Well,
I find.
Living in appropriate times then, aren't you?
It's feeling more and more like that every day.
Mm-hmm. So it's
beginning
is,
to feel a lot like the apocalypse.
The album is called Anthems for a Stateless Nation.
Yes.
So is this kind of, you know, is this the sound of things falling apart?
It's the sound of things falling apart and then hopefully getting back together at the end.
Mm. So not a, people have said that despite the kind of mid-century sounds, that it is kind of a dark-hued record. But do you see it as ultimately an optimistic one?
I hope so.
Mm-hmm.
The song that me and Kat are going to sing is.
Is that Liquid Modernity?
That is We'll Sail Above This. Liquid Modernity is the sort of the middle of the plot line of everything in constant flux and change. And me mm-hmm. and Emily sing that one together.
All right. Which one do you want to do next?
We're going to do Liquid Modernity.
Okay. Subtitled.
You Can Never Go Home.
Well, that's a cheery thought. Here is Noah and the Megafauna. They are playing live at Joe's Pub on Sunday night here in New York at 7 o'clock with special guest Kat Edmondson on vocals. And here they are playing for us live on Soundcheck.
Walk from your warmth of your family factory town. Heat spilling over, flooding ambition surrounds. You can never go home, you can never go home.
Rolling the spill over ocean and unknown terrain. Liquid love, liquid fear, liquidly tenuous states. You can never go home,
you can never go home.
You can never go home.
No, no. You can never go home. See the world engulfed by flood and flame. Rudely stretched out in a way.
And you hop when it sings from your weight. And hope something else takes its place.
Cause you know now that home is just change. You can never go.
Once a year in Bombay.
Always and never of everyone's wet and displaced.
You can never go home.
You can never go home.
You can never go home.
No, no.
You can never go home to the hills or the sea of light, where the darkness adds to the shine.
Where it rains from so thin you can climb. And you take in the world you can't find.
Moving displaced pop new in the rhyme.
You can never go home.
Deeper down, deeper down. Capitals now call the reefs. Deeper
and the blood's been replaced in your veins, and the skin on your back's not the same, and the old god is now new fair game, and they'll curse you for showing no shame, 'cause you know now that home is just change.
Once again, Noah and the Megafauna, live on Soundcheck, Liquid Modernity, subtitled You Can Never Go Home. Noah and Emily singing that one. Special guest vocalist Kat Edmondson singing with them on the next tune and on Sunday night's event here in New York at Joe's Pub at 7 p.m. Noah, I want to make sure we have time for you and Kat to sing this next one. So you want to get right to it?
I'm not very interesting.
We'll Sail Above This is the name of this final performance from Noah and the Megafauna live on Soundcheck.
Started out shipwrecked, foundlings rolling upon the shore.
The past is drowned down there. Our drunken captains are no more,
and not a tear is shed. They knew just what they had in store. They borrowed on our time for sprawling dreams and gold anchors. We'll sail above this. We'll sail above this. We'll sail above this. No, we won't sail around. Built a life from shreds and put the pieces back in time.
Deliver now the winds. We'll skip the water sublime.
And I will know my brothers. Our wealth is only now our time. We'll sail above this. We'll sail above this. We'll sail above this. No, we won't sail around. We'll sail.
sail above this. No, we won't sail around.
Noah and the Megafauna, with guest vocalist Kat Edmondson, live on Soundcheck, and We'll Sail Above This. The album is called Anthems for a Stateless Nation. Noah, thanks for bringing the band in and playing for us today.
Thanks for having us. This was great.
And that's going to do it for Soundcheck today. On Monday, we chart the rise and fall of MTV, and we have live music from sax player Rudrish Mahanthapa and his band. And if you missed any of our Super Collectors series all this week, you can find it on our website. Visit us at wnyc.org/soundcheck. Our tech director is Irene Trudell. Our producers, Katie Bishop and Greta Cohn. Our senior producer, Joel Meyer. We had help today from George Wellington, Gina Gildasis, and Crystal Kim. I'm John Schaefer. Have a great weekend. Be with us Monday for another Soundcheck.